Hi, Sean. This is Nigel Lithgow.
Nigel Lithgow, executive producer of American Idol, really credited with bringing the show to the United States. And he has a new podcast called Idol Memories. If you love or have ever loved American Idol, you're going to want to give this a listen. The stories that you could tell, because you saw everything that the cameras didn't see over the years. I mean, you saw it all, right?
Well, not everything. I'm learning new things out as well in talking to the and interviewing the contestants from season one. And I learned a number of things yesterday in talking to Nikki McKibben, who came third on the show.
Can you give us anything that you've learned that maybe we haven't heard in the podcast yet?
Evidently, the final four singers had to sing the two songs that were going to be released as an A-side, and they had to make their recordings of them because the minute the winner was chosen, those discs were going on sale. And it was, you know, it wasn't the time of streaming then. They were still making CDs. So it was Kelly Clarkson, Justin Guarini, Nikki McKibben, and Tamira Gray. On the day that they were being, one of them was going to be released from the program and go home, all four of them should have been given the CDs. However, only three of them were given CDs. Tamira Gray was not given a CD.
Wow.
And she asked the other three, did you all get CDs? And they said, yes. And it just preempted the whole thing about her being told she was going home that night. It was a stupid mistake made by somebody on the record company side.
Well, so speaking of mistakes, I mean, you say in the first episode that you kind of felt like every decision had to be perfect for this show to work. And I'm like, well, my goodness, no pressure.
But it's absolutely true. I mean, I must say that Simon Cowell was really strong behind this. We had to find the best singers to provide America with that choice so that they got it right. If we'd have produced a bad American Idol on that first series, the show would not have lasted.
Yeah, and yet, how nerve-wracking was it for, I guess, maybe Simon, certainly for you to, you know, at some point you turn this thing over to the hands of the American people? I mean, I know that a lot of creative people like yourself tend to be control freaks. I mean, was that stressful for you?
Yes, both Simon Cowell and myself are control freaks. It was stressful. However, I was getting the actual results. So I knew who was getting the most votes, which I calmed everybody down with so that, you know, when Simon was there saying America's put through a couple of losers here and you're just not good enough to be in this competition and all the other terrible things he was saying to these poor kids, we knew that the best people were getting the highest votes.
Well, this might be a weird question to ask, but who do you think is the most talented loser, like the most talented person who didn't win but maybe could have or even should have? Is there anybody that comes to mind?
Oh, sure. Yeah, there are a number of people. I'll name two of them, and there are more than two, but I'll name two of them. And that is Tamira Gray from season one. We thought she was the most consistent singer and the best singer up until a point where Kelly Clarkson really steamed ahead. And then we had to say, yeah, no, sure. Kelly was tremendous. And, of course, Adam Lambert, who now sings with Queen.
Yeah. So I know that throughout the podcast, you're sort of drawing back the curtain in some ways on the audition process, and you know, we even as viewers got to see the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Certainly did.
Yeah. Was it a surprise, or did you know going into the show that the auditions were going to be such a popular and important component?
No, the auditions was the actual thing that sold the entire program to me. I originally saw it in Australia, and if you listen to the podcast, you'll get the whole story of it. My son was working out in Australia, and I saw a show called Pop Stars, which did draw the curtain back and show that side of it that we've never really seen on television, the actual auditions in order to get on television.
Yeah.
So that's what sold the show to me. I bought the format, took it back to the UK. We made Pop Stars in the UK, which inspired Simon Fuller to create Pop Idol in the UK. It was so successful. America obviously saw it and said, come over here. The American production team was told not to change anything by Rupert Murdoch. He said, I want to keep that sort of lack of sensitivity that the Brits have got and keep it as honest as that. Simon Cowell came over here. When we first started, you know, there were fathers waiting to take him out with baseball bats.
Yeah.
This was, you know, they couldn't believe how cruel this man could be to their kids. And the kids were being misled, as you saw, you know, that they were told they had great voices, or it was the time of karaoke, and of course they didn't. And this was always going to be a $1 million recording contract, so you've got to be a really good singer. We held our ground, and as the years went by, America appeared to like the honesty and agree with Simon Cowell on a lot of the occasions. So the whole thing changed. That needle went from don't be cruel to, okay, be honest.
Yeah.
And in past, I think past, it's fair to say in past shows, if somebody wasn't good enough, they would be told, I'm sorry, you're not quite what we're looking for, but don't you look beautiful? And what a beautiful dress. And I love your shoes.
Yeah.
And it sort of softened the blow. But of course, with Simon Cowell, it would be, oh, God, now I know why God makes earwax.
You know, I was privileged, and I'm trying to think of what year this would have been. This may have been 2003 or four. I met Paula, Simon, and Randy, and something that surprised me when I met the three of them was, out of the three, this was totally off camera, Simon was the warmest, most engaging of the three. And that was so surprising because I was scared that he was going to, you know, I'm just there as a media person, and I thought he was going to start ripping on me about something. And so,
well, don't forget, he is a professional businessman.
Yeah.
And finding talent as an A&R man that he originally started as was his job.
Yeah.
And consequently, you know, nowadays you have celebrities and stars being judges, and of course they're not going to want to upset anybody. That means nothing to them at the end of the day. For Simon Cowell, it meant that his record company was going to be signing this artist, and he wanted somebody that would make money.
Sure.
Because that is the professional way an A&R guy looks at it. And he wasn't worried about selling tickets to his concerts because he didn't do any, or selling any of his records. He didn't do any. Whereas nowadays, you know, these artists can't be honest to that degree and might not want to be either. But with him, it was a job of work. Once that job stopped, he becomes the charismatic Simon Cowell that I know.
The Idol Memories podcast, still plenty of time for you to jump on board. And I don't know if you know this or not, Nigel. I don't know how closely you're monitoring this, but I checked earlier this morning. You have a 4.9 rating on iTunes, which is almost unheard of.
Whoa, I did not know that.
Yeah.
What's it out of? 20.
No.
Oh, terrific. And one pops today, one drops today. And I think it could be one of my favorites because I really do reveal a night that I only just remembered, where we told each other, that's Paul and myself and the American producer at that point, Brian Gudinski, where we went out for dinner and told each other the most embarrassing stories that have happened in our lives. And Paula's involves Michael Jackson, Janet Jackson, and Michael Jackson's monkey Bubbles. So you've got to listen to that, Sean, today if you can. It'll make you laugh.
Quite a teaser, my friend. Thank you so much, Nigel.
Sean, thank you very much for the opportunity.